So here's a phenomenon that many of you are probably familiar with. If you have two tuning forks, both tuned to vibrate at 440 hertz, that's A above middle C, if you strike one of them, even if they're some distance apart, the other will begin to vibrate as well. It's a very simple example of acoustic resonance. Another somewhat similar phenomenon. We know that our hearts beat, but it's not just the heart as a whole that beats. There are individual cells in the heart that beat as well, single cells that pulse, each at their own pace, until they're brought together, and when they're brought together, they begin beating in sync. If you separate them, the synchronicity breaks down and they begin beating independently, but if you bring them together, they beat as one. Here's another one. Newborn infants, as young as 12 hours old, will mimic facial expressions of adults. Now, that's not in and of itself terribly surprising. What is really surprising is that newborns who are congenitally blind can and will do the same thing. The mother holds them, and the mother frowns or offers a surprise. The child can and will do the same thing, even if they can't see the mother doing it. To get even freakier, there's something called quantum entanglement, which even sounds a little menacing. This is when two subatomic particles, electrons, for instance, become entangled, and then whatever happens to one also affects the other one, and it doesn't matter how far apart they are. If one is spinning clockwise and the other is spinning counterclockwise, and something happens to the one spinning clockwise that makes it change direction, the other will immediately also change direction, no matter how far apart they are. Einstein called this spooky action at a distance. And for a long time, it was only theoretical, but recently scientists have been able to do experiments where they can actually observe this happening. Harmonic resonance, synced up heart cells, quantum entanglement all point to something profound and true about the reality in which we live and move and have our being, that we are connected with everything that is in deep and profound ways and in ways that we have only barely begun to comprehend. Today, the Apostle Philip, after having preached throughout Samaria, suddenly gets a feeling, I need to go to Gaza. Now, I know the story says an angel of the Lord said to him, get up and go south, but you've undoubtedly had a similar experience. You've had a feeling that you should call a friend or that you should go and visit someone, and then you find out when you do that something remarkable has just happened to them, or that they were thinking of you too, or that you pick up the phone to call them and they're calling you at the same time. You've experienced that kind of spooky action, that resonance. So Philip gets this feeling and he goes, and he and the Ethiopian eunuch find each other and they become entangled. They become entangled in the same way that all Christians are entangled, through the sacrament of baptism. And after Philip is spirited away, they both continue to rejoice and to proclaim the good news. And so, in a very real way, what they do, they do continue to have an effect on one another. We are also entangled with them, and their story affects us. It resonates with us. Maybe it resonates strongly with you, maybe only slightly. Maybe you catch it only as a dim desire for something more, for something deeply meaningful in your life, but somewhere in you, it resonates because we are entangled. Like branches and vines, we are entangled with each other. We abide in them and they abide in us. We are one. spooky action at a distance. The simultaneous pulse of single cells, the vibrations of sight and sound all around us, the deep weaving of connection from our earliest moments. We are entangled with each other, and we are entangled in God. We abide in God. And God is love, and so we abide in love. We are woven together in a fabric of compassion. Like branches, we are attached to the source, the vine, the true vine. We are made of love and woven together in compassion. And yet, we also live in the elements of our earthly context, our families, our work, our neighborhoods, our cities. And too often, those places don't look like the face of love. We see too many sheep led to slaughter and far too much humiliation and denied justice. We are made of love and entangled with one another, and yet true love, not affection or romantic or even brotherly love, but pure godly love, is like the face of God itself. It's hard, if not impossible, to look directly at it. We can sense the resonance of it. We can learn to respond to it. We can mirror it for others, but looking directly at it is all but impossible. And when we do look away, there are so many other powerful, raw emotions that are also very hard to look directly at. So in the face of the roiling sea of emotions that often crash over us and sometimes threaten to sweep us away, we learn how to protect ourselves. How to maintain a sense of stability. We learn how to minimize, and we learn how to lash out. We learn how to deflect, and we learn how to act out. We learn how to hide from those powerful emotions. We learn how to hide from the face of God, and we take up life in the shadows. We live in God's love and light, and we also live in the shadows, in our own shadows and in the shadows of others. And we learn early on how to read and react to the shadows around us. Children of alcoholics learn how to read the signs and learn strategies for minimizing the damage. Children of depressed parents learn how to overfunction. Children of color learn very different lessons than white children do about power and authority and who has it and who gets to wield it. Through multiple joyful and painful experiences, we branch out in life and we learn how to relate to other branches. We learn empathy. We learn apathy. We learn antipathy. All in varying amounts based on the circumstances of our lives. We learn how to recognize and cherish shared experience, empathy. We learn how to shut down and shut out emotions and experiences that cause pain in ourselves, apathy. And we learn that some emotions are so painful and so frightening that we actively push them away, antipathy. It's been a hard week to look at the news. A lot of disturbing and frightening and emotionally raw images from Nepal to Baltimore. Omid Safi, the director of Duke University's Islamic Studies Center and a weekly columnist for Krista Tippett's podcast On Being, offered a very helpful reflection this week on both Nepal and Baltimore. When the news of the earthquake in Nepal broke, he says, mingled with the shocked state of grief was the immediate response I heard everywhere. How can I help? What can I do to help? This is humanity at our best. And he contrasts this with the responses in Baltimore. Now, granted, the context there is vastly more complicated. The dysfunction and trauma there has simmered for decades, and the path forward there is not at all as simple and clear as sending medical help and rebuilding. Safi writes, in the face of a natural disaster, we do not lash out against nature or God, but reach out in compassion to one another. But it's harder for us to exhibit the same compassion when we humans are involved in causing the damage. And yet Baltimore and Ferguson before it, and LA 20 years ago, and Selma 50 years ago, what they all reveal is that we are in pain. We are suffering. Some of us are suffering in anger, and some of us are suffering in fear. But we are suffering. What would it look like, Safi asks, to see us respond to pandemic racism by embodying the ethics of Nepal and reaching out in compassion? To look beyond the headlines, to listen beyond the 24-hour news cycle and hear the voices of anguish alongside the voices of deep humility and strength and compassion, which are all clearly present. A half century ago, John Donne, one of Anglicanism's greatest poets, wrote, "Any man's death diminishes me because I am involved in mankind. Any man's death diminishes me because I am involved in mankind. We are entangled with each other. We are entangled with the people of Nepal just as surely as we are entangled with the people of Baltimore. What happens to them affects us, and what we do affects them. We live in the shadows of systemic injustice and violence, and yet we can also still feel the pulse of love. We can still sense the vibrations of that self-giving, resurrected Easter love, the love that casts out fear. And what Jesus and Philip and John and the Ethiopian eunuch do still resonates with us, still affects us, still calls us to reach out, to stretch, to step out of the shadows, to continue growing toward the light, to seek the face of God, mirrored in the love that we express to one another, to retune our hearts to the vibrations of that living fabric of compassion that weaves all of us together, to abide in the love that creates and inspires, the love that brings justice and peace, to live in God and bear fruit that brings healing to a hurting world."